Welcome to Greg Gabriel Talks Chicago Bears. The man next to me is indeed Greg Gabriel. I am Aldo Gandia. Greg has over 30 years of NFL experience, 9 of them with the Chicago Bears. Greg, how are you today?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing really well.
I was just thinking about this. You know what? It's closer to 40 now when you figure it all out.
Is that
I started in 1981. It's 2021. That's, you know, but it was in July of 81. So 39 and a half years I've been doing this stuff.
Amazing. What's your favorite memory or like favorite accomplishment? The one thing that you, when you think back about those almost 40 years of pro football experience, what do you think?
Well, it's getting the Super Bowls. I mean, you know, I've been on four teams that have gone to Super Bowls, mm-hmm. 1-2. Winning's great. Losing a Super Bowl sucks. And winning them is great. Won the first two, lost the last two. That was probably it. And just a lot of fun. You know, the first one was against Denver in January 1987. Mm-hmm. That was Super Bowl 21. So it was the year after the Bears went to Super Bowl 20. Mm-hmm. And Super Bowl 20 was the very first Super Bowl I ever went to. So, at that time, that was only the second combine. And it was the week after the Super Bowl. So the first time, and I know I'm backtracking a little bit, but the first combine was in January 1985. Before that, you know, there were three different combines, and each of the scouting combines had their own little workout session. And mm-hmm. there were like three combines or three workout sessions over a four-week period. Not every player went to every one. They might go to one or two, but skip the third or whatever. So, you know, the ultimate decision was to try to put them all together, thus the name Combine. And that was in 1985, and it was at Arizona State outdoors, mm-hmm. in the week after the Super Bowl. So, and it rained 2 days of the workouts, and it's the chance of rain in Arizona in January is like 8%. Well, guess what? It rained. The next year, it was in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. So because it was going to be in New Orleans, I got tickets to the Super Bowl. I was working for the Giants, got tickets to the Super Bowl for the Giants or for the game. Mm-hmm. Went down there a couple days before the game with my wife and some friends. We went to the Super Bowl, and then the combine started Thursday. So I just, you know, stuck in New Orleans. And actually, an interesting story was, you know, Parcells was down there at the time. So Parcells and I were working at, we're staying at the same hotel where the Giants were staying at. Mm-hmm. And so we go to work out, and he goes, let's go get some breakfast. And I said, at that time, I've only been with the Giants, year and a half or something, mm-hmm. 2 years. And had interaction with Parcells, but never went out to eat with him before. Mm-hmm. So we're having breakfast, and that's when the space shuttle goes off and blew up.
Oh my goodness! Yes.
Well, we were having breakfast. I mean, it was really. I mean, that's a memory that I'll never, never forget. Then the next year, when we were in the Super Bowl, and that was at Pasadena, the combine was in Indianapolis. So I went right from Pasadena to Indy for the first combine in Indy, and it's been in Indy ever since.
Mm-hmm. So your greatest memory at the combine, what player did you see at the combine and you went, holy cow, I had no idea.
That'd be impossible. I was at like the first 27 combines or something like that, 28. In fact, we used to keep track of it. Kevin Colbert, GM of the Steelers, mm-hmm. and a good friend of mine, he's the king. He's been to more combines than anybody. Mm-hmm. And so I miss, you know, I leave the Bears in after the 2010 draft, but mm-hmm. I was at the 2011 combine, but I had a media credential. And so I go, Kevin, I'm here. Does this count? He goes, no, You're not on the team. So, and then the following year, I was there with Philly, but Kevin's the king. So he said he still got the record. And, you know, I haven't gone since 2015 now, nor do I want to.
Oh, wow. All right. Before we talk about this upcoming game, Bears at Saints, wild card round, everyone in the chat room is talking about this Deshaun Watson rumor that was created by your old buddy.
Yeah, and I shot that down real quick. That's a made-up rumor. If you read his whole post, that whole thing, well, what if maybe yada, yada, yada. He ain't going anywhere. He's the player. He's the franchise. That's who you build the franchise around. You think Nick Caserio is going to come in there, sign a 6-year contract, and get rid of the quarterback? Give me a freaking break.
Maybe.
That is a clickbait post, period.
But if you're in position to draft a quarterback that you really like and you can build great assets. Like
who's going to be better than Deshaun Watson in this draft?
Nobody.
Okay. Then why would you do it?
Because you feel like, well, you weren't winning with Deshaun Watson. Maybe we need so many pieces around
the team. True, but they had a wacko as head coach and GM who got rid of all the good assets. So yeah. I've known Nick Caserio a long time. I don't know him well, and I haven't talked to him in years. But, you know, when you get on the road and you meet everybody, and Nick is very, very astute. He has had his pick of GM jobs over the last 5-6 years, turned down every single one, you know, until he felt the situation was right. And I think, you know, he felt the timing was right now to leave New England. His contract was up. He actually wanted to leave and go to Houston, you know, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Nick, the last thing he's going to do is get rid of a quarterback. You build a team with two things. A quarterback, an offensive, or three things. Quarterback, offensive line, defensive line. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, you know, they haven't gotten the offensive line right. They've got their defensive line isn't too bad. They still got to build the offensive line up. And, you know, they traded for Tunsil, but I think, you know, Tunsil's got a little bit of airhead in him, as we saw on draft day when he got drafted. You know, so talented guy, but, you know, can you trust him all the time? But if they get rid of one of the best receivers in football, I don't know what O'Brien was thinking, but he wasn't thinking about his team. Yeah. You know, that's a case of I'm smarter than everybody else, and I can build this team my way. And when we all know the whole objective is to collect good players, not get rid of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's like Doug Dyer in the chat room says that he heard the rumor, and of course these are just rumors, that the Jets could offer a 2021 first round pick, a 2022 first round pick, and players and so forth. That could be a really huge haul, and you know, maybe their quarterback, if this new GM believes in Sam Darnold. I know you don't. No way, huh?
Sam Darnold is freaking terrible. Okay. Who would you rather have, Sam Darnold or Mitchell Trubisky? Serious question.
Mitchell.
I don't think you find anybody in the league that said would take Sam Darnold over Mitchell Trubisky. And there's a lot of people that don't like Mitchell. So, and here's one thing about starting in January: the lying season starts, and the made up rumors, like this guy in the chat room says. There's a rumor. I mean, I didn't see the rumor. They're all horseshit. Excuse my language. 90% of what you read over the next 3.5 months is total made-up bullshit. Okay. Nobody is talking a trade. What's today? January 7th? January 7th about the draft. It's not happening. Charlie Casserly, who used to be he's the GM of the Redskins, and then he was the GM of Houston. Always one of the and Charlie's a good guy. I like Charlie. I've known him for years and years and years, but he always came up with the bullshit rumors, and he always started and everybody'd laugh at him. He'd start him in January. Well, I've already received trade offers for a trade up or a trade down.
Mm-hmm.
All he was saying, number one, what he was saying was a lie, but number two, he's saying my pick's for sale. You know, one way or another, my pick's for sale. Call me if you're interested. But right. Nobody gets serious about that stuff
right
until April. You know, you got to go through the process.
Right.
You got to find out, you know, right now, NFL people don't say a damn thing about the players that are going to be in the draft. Mm-hmm. They never do. They shut their mouths. They keep their mouths shut. It's the draftniks that say stuff. And most, and they're all full of shit, too. And the, you know, the worst is Matt Miller. I was talking to a GM, and he told me that bullshit. Nobody talks to him.
He's looking for a job, by the way.
Well, he left Bleacher Report. I don't know if he got fired or whatever. But he's got a radio show. And what's that south, where all those casinos are in, show, oh. in Southwest Missouri? Branson or Branson? Branson?
Right.
Okay. He's got a radio show in Branson, Missouri. Big deal. Him. That's about as big as Gurnee, Illinois, where I live.
Greg, by the way, in the chat room, Greg, people, I think you've got a bunch of groupies here. People are saying, I love Greg. I want more Greg. Can Greg answer this? Can Greg answer? We could do a whole 1 hour show of you just interacting with everybody in the chat room. You have really developed a huge following here. People love you.
Come up with the money.
There you go.
Show me the money.
There you go. All right, let's talk a little bit about this Bears-Saints game, and then I'll get to some of the questions that are being posed in the chat room for you. Tell me what your biggest concern for the Chicago Bears is in this wild card game on Sunday in New Orleans against a Saints team that is among the best at rushing the ball, creating offense, and their defense isn't too bad either.
My main concern is not the Bears' offense. It's the Bears' defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they came up flat against Green Bay. Now they're going to play against – I think, you know, I work with Sean Payton in New York, so I've known him a long time. Mm-hmm. Great, great coach. I think he's one of the best offensive minds in football. They already destroyed the Bears earlier this year, but that was during the Bears down during that six-game losing streak.
Mm-hmm.
But he knows how to find ways to beat you, you know, from an offensive standpoint. He's one of the best. We saw what Green Bay did. They isolated wide receivers on linebackers in one-on-one situations and won every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Bears got to change their defensive scheme to alleviate that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is that possible in a week? Who knows? You know, now if you get Jalen Johnson back, I don't think you're going to get Screen back because, you know, he's had, this is like a sixth concussion, and obviously there's something gone wrong with that thing because yeah. he hasn't even cleared protocol yet.
Right.
And I don't think he's – as of yesterday, he hadn't cleared. So who knows if he's going to be available. Still, you can get if Jalen is back, you can get Vildor then playing on the inside. To me, that's a plus over having Duke Shelley or Screen there. I think Kendall Vildor's got a bright future in the league. I almost said a great future ahead of him, and that's like one of the no-nos in talk radio podcasts or whatever.
Yeah.
But I really like it the way he plays, and I think he's gotten a little better each week. He's a tough, aggressive kid. He's got good size, real good length, runs well. He's a physical guy. But if Roquan Smith can't play, Bears are in trouble because you don't have anybody to replace him that's even half of what he is.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny Trevathan is very good in his own way, but he's the complement to Roquan Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now if Roquan can't play, and chances are he can't, now, you know, you're in deep trouble at that linebacker position. So you got to make a lot of adjustments on the defensive side. Who the hell knows what they're going to do to come up with. Can they beat New Orleans? Of course they can. Will they? I don't think so.
That match in November actually went into overtime. The Bears were came back in the fourth quarter,
right.
But the Saints were without Michael Thomas, without Emmanuel Sanders, and so there's a lot of these two teams are totally different than they were back then.
True. Right? Now, and Michael Thomas, and we talked about this in the pregame chat that we did before that game. Thomas has been in the doghouse all year.
Yeah.
You know, with the Saints, and there was even talk that he could have got traded at the trade deadline. He did have an injury. He's been on IR for a while. He's only played in seven games. So he's missed nine games this year. He's supposed to be practicing this week and be back. I mean, he is a tough guy to match up against. And then Sanders is going to be full go, and he was their second leading receiver. He had 82 receptions. The key guy that you got to be able to shut down is Kamara. Nobody knows if he's going to play. You assume he's going to play. He went into the COVID protocol and has been locked up since last Friday. He can come out, I think, on Saturday, assuming he clears. But what are going to be the repercussions of him having COVID? I don't think anybody has the answer to that, because everybody reacts differently to this virus. Mm. You know, he could be 100% and kill you, or he could be 50%, maybe not even that. So I don't think we have the answer to that. You have to prepare for him as if he's going to be 100%. And that means he's a great rusher, and he was their leading receiver. He had 83 receptions, on the season. So that's a tough guy to deal with for any defensive coordinator.
Right.
And then you got Michael Thomas coming back, regardless of not if he was in the doghouse. Right. Guy's still a big play, and he's not a deep threat. You know, I think Michael Thomas and A-Rob are very similar type players. Mm-hmm. They nickel and dime you to death.
In the first meeting, Nick Foles was the quarterback, and Foles was 28 out of 41 for 272 yards, threw two touchdown passes, one interception, was sacked five times. How much of a difference do you think is the difference between Nick Foles versus a Saints team and Mitchell Trubisky versus the Saints defense?
Well, you got a different offensive line right now than you had in that game.
Huge.
Okay, and this offensive line is played pretty good. And this offensive line isn't going to be the offensive line that you're going to see in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
There's still going to be some changes made. But the line has played better. They've stayed healthy since they went to this group. Everybody's played better football. They're running the football. They weren't running the football worth the damn when they had that first game. So now that's that part of the Bears game that the Saints are going to have to deal with. Plus the fact that Mitchell is playing pretty good football. He's very good with the underneath stuff. They got him rolling out, doing the bootlegs, that type of thing. So the Bears offense is going to be entirely different than what the Saints saw earlier in the year. But at the same time, they've got five games of tape now with this Bears offense in which to figure out how to stop.
Yeah. Hey, this pass rush for the Saints, they've only got 45 sacks, which is actually less than they had last year.
But they got a guy with 13 and a half in Trey Hendrickson.
Exactly. Who is this guy? And he's
I really liked him coming out. It was Florida Atlantic or Florida International that he went to. It was one of those, smaller Florida schools. Mm-hmm. I thought he was a wild man coming out. I had like a third round grade in him in the Pro Football Weekly draft guide when I wrote him up. A guy that just tough as nails, athletic, not a big guy. He's probably 260, 255, but he knows how, and he's relentless. And he plays hard. And then on the other side, you got Cam Jordan, who's a bigger guy, totally different body composition than Hendricks is, but they really work well together. And between the two, you've got really two good outside pass rushers. Then inside you got, I can't say his name, Onyemata. David Onyemata, he's got 6.5 sacks.
Yeah.
And the one guy had been hurt. It was our first round pick, a few years ago. He's been hurt. So really he hasn't Sheldon Rankins. He's played in 12 games, but he only got a sack and a half. But their main guys are those three guys, Onyemata, Jordan, and Hendrickson. And that's going to be a lot, for the Bears offensive line to deal with.
They've got 18 interceptions this season. Malcolm Jenkins, Janoris Jenkins, and Marcus Williams all have three each. I was surprised to see that Marcus Lattimore only has two. What do you think about this defensive backfield of the Saints?
They're good, and they got good ball skills. They make plays. The one guy, Jenkins, Janoris Jenkins, he's not a real big corner, but he's big enough. In fact, if you want to compare a young Kendall Vildor to somebody, he's kind of like Janoris Jenkins was when Jenkins was a young player. Mm-hmm. Jenkins a little bit ahead of him as a young player. But Malcolm Jenkins, he's been around a long time. He's a pro, and he's very, very good.
Do you think that the Bears should rely more on running the ball or have a balanced offense? Or you think they should open up things and test this defense and just go for broke almost?
You look at it, I kind of like what Mitch said. It might have been yesterday.
Yeah,
we got nothing to lose. Everybody's already counting this out. So I do they do something different? Maybe. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I can guarantee you they're going to play hard. They're going to play hard. Did Hicks play in that first game, or was he was hurt then too?
He did not.
Okay. That's going to make a difference too. But still, if Roquan can't play, that's a huge loss to the Bears defense. In fact, I would think, getting ahead of ourselves, that going in to the draft, either in free agency or in the draft, you got to draft another inside linebacker as well as a offensive tackle, as well as a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I think right now, in my opinion, those might be the three things that they got to do going into the draft and free agency.
We always hear about drafting best player available, but really, isn't it best player available at a position of need?
Well, okay. I mean, that's almost for another time, because I could go on for 25 minutes describing that. You've got your needs always play into it, and your board ends up getting stacked that way. So you can say, well, he's our best player, but you just kind of push those guys up a little bit more that Phil needs, because you got to take care of it, but you're not going to push them up a level. You follow what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
When I say that, if you've got four or five players with the same grade, the need player's going at the top of the stack.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have the same grade, so theoretically you can say, that's our best player because the grade's the same. And you're going to have, it's not like the grade system isn't so broad that you only got one or two players at a certain grade. You got them bunched. You got a ton.
Right.
And then you find different ways to separate them.
When are you starting your kind of evaluation of some of the players that perhaps the Bears should target in round one and round two?
When I know how the underclassmen are in the draft, because I don't want to waste my time. The declare day has always been the 15th, and then they get a 3-day. It's like that buyer's remorse type thing. I can change your mind. So you got they can declare by the 15th, but they can pull back out by the 18th. On the 18th, the league puts out the list of what underclassmen are in the draft. Now, if you use the last few years as an example, there's going to be over 100 underclassmen in the draft because that's what there's been the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think what's different about this year is a lot of these kids didn't play a full schedule because of COVID. Some guys opted out, so now you got to go back and look at last year's tape.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little scary because you haven't seen them play lately. And then you've got very few kids at the FCS level, Division II level. Very few of them even played. You know, so that's going to affect the draft a little bit because there's no tape on them. Some of them are supposedly going to be playing in the spring, but that's not going to help. In fact, I haven't heard a thing about that in a couple of months about these schools, you know, trying to play in the spring. You know, these smaller schools like the Patriot League and things like that, who knows what, if I would think based on the current COVID situation, that's not going to happen. I think you need a few more months of the vaccine getting around where millions of people have the vaccine and that's still, you know, get off target here. I called my doctor the other day, who's a, you know, he's a good friend of mine. I actually texted him. So I said, given my age and I got asthma and some other lung conditions, and I don't want to get pushed up a priority list. I don't want to jump the line, but where would I stand? Mm-hmm. And I get a text back, the same as everybody else in Illinois right now. Put your name in on the list and they might give you a call in 3 months. You know?
Really?
Yeah, seriously.
I'm surprised. That is...
And so there's a website you can go to in Lake County and then you can, you know, put your name on the list. And he said, I'm an internist. I can't get my wife a prior, and he can get the shot because he's a, you know, medical provider, but he can't get his wife the shot. And he goes, you're going to be like her, one of 55,000 already on the list.
Mm-hmm. 55,000 already on the list. Whoa.
That was a couple days ago. There might be a few more now.
Probably 100,000 now. All right. A lot of thoughts here in the chat room. Perhaps Mitchell Trubisky should run like hell in this game. Really utilize his legs. Use him. Hit his entire repertoire. And what's your opinion on that? Do you think that Mitch Trubisky put everything on his shoulders in terms of utilizing him more as a running back and also relying on his arm?
Well, I'll put it this way. You got to assume it's the last game from a coaching standpoint.
Right, right.
So, okay, because there is no tomorrow. If you lose, you're done. You pack your bags, you go home. See you whenever we can get together again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you pull all the stops out. If they're lucky enough to win, then you pull all the stops out again next week. And, you know, I would think, how about this? If the Bears win, you know who they're going to be playing next week regardless?
The Packers, right?
That's right, because the Packers are the number one seed, and it's going to be up in Green Bay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm with you. Go all out. But one of the other things that I would like to see, you know, Chuck Pagano's exotic schemes and so forth just don't seem to be working. You and I are a little bit I shouldn't speak for you. I'm a little bit more old school guy. Just go one-on-one versus people. Don't rely on disguising things so much. Just rely on the talents of your players. Perhaps Pagano should eliminate some of this exotic stuff and just tell his players, go beat your man out there, have fun, and go win a football game.
Well, here's the difference between – and I'll say this. I think last week's game was a little bit closer. And when we talked Monday at the show Monday, you know, you go into the fourth quarter, it's a fairly close game.
For sure.
When you look at – and Drew, I'm not taking anything away from Drew Brees, but Drew Brees today isn't what Drew Brees was even last year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's had some injuries. He is in his 40s. He's not a big guy. He's never been the most athletic guy. What he is, he reads things. He's on par with Aaron Rodgers as far as being able to read a defense, and he's got that quick release. He doesn't have the arm that Aaron Rodgers has, but he doesn't have the mobility either. Mm-hmm. So, I you know, from that standpoint, that's a plus for the Bears, but still, just like Aaron Rodgers, there's nothing that Drew Brees hasn't seen that he can't figure out. So, yeah, it's basically, you got to go get him. I think it's going to be easier to get after Brees. And if you hit him a couple times, he may be done. And then you've got Taysom Hill coming in, and who knows what he's going to be like in a playoff situation.
Mm-hmm. He is a load to bring down, that Taysom Hill.
Yeah, but when you got to put him in a playoff game and be your quarterback, and not your situational quarterback,
yeah,
but be your every down quarterback, what's he going to give you?
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting point. Based on your almost 40 years of experience in professional football, do you find that certain players don't play to their capabilities in big games because of nerves?
No, I haven't seen that, but I know if you see guys, I mean, you're evaluating them. You're evaluating every player you have in every game. But if you see guys come up short in big games, mm-hmm. whether it's a playoff game or a big game during the season, and you know, you give them a pass one time, but if you see it over and over again, then in my opinion is you got to get rid of the guy. He's not going to be reliable because he can't, for whatever reason, he can't play in that big situation. When the stage is big, he's got stage fright.
By the way, somebody in the chat room, Doug, our good buddy, says that he is Taysom Hill is limited because of a concussion, so he may not play.
Limited because of if he's practicing, chances are he's going to clear protocol.
Yeah, let me go over to NBC Sports here and get the latest. Taysom played 21 offensive snaps, 3 on special teams Sunday. He left the locker room early in the game. He left for the locker room early in the game, did not return. 3 days later, Hill is on the practice report, team's practice report for the first time this season. He was limited in Wednesday practice with a concussion. That's the only report I got.
Okay, so he's already got, being that he was, quote, limited,
mm-hmm.
he's already passed through the first phase of concussion protocol because he's on the field.
Okay.
He's doing something. Okay, that's Wednesday. Chances are by Sunday he's going to be totally cleared. Now, if he missed practice, and generally speaking, when you're in concussion protocol and you're missing practice, you're not even on the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got you inside. You know, that's like the case with Buster Skrine, however you say his name. Skrine, how do you say it?
Okay, I say Buster Skrine, but who knows?
I know. So, you know, you haven't seen him on the field in weeks. Okay, well, if you're seeing this guy on the field, he's a lot closer to being totally cleared mm-hmm. than a guy like Buster.
Doug asks, given that Wednesday was a walkthrough, does that still mean the same regarding his concussion protocol?
For New Orleans?
Yeah, for Taysom Hill.
Yeah, because you got to – when you turn in the injury report, mm-hmm. you turn it in assuming you had a full practice.
Okay. Even if
so, yes, but for – for league purposes, that gets distributed to your opponent and stuff.
Right.
It's assumed that it's a full practice.
Gotcha. Gotcha very much. All right.
So, in other words, they're saying if we had a full practice, he would have been limited.
Mm-hmm. All right. One other thing regarding this defense is the Bears' defense against the Saints. They only got one sack against Drew Brees, and as we said earlier, Akeem Hicks wasn't playing in that game, and he's a big factor in trying to he handles those double teams so the outside rushers can get there. How much of a difference is Hicks going to make in this game, and how important is it to sack Drew Brees as opposed to maybe just disrupt things?
I think it's important given that he has had missed time this year. He had multiple rib fractures.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I can guarantee you those aren't 100% healed right now, and he's probably going to have a flak vest on.
Mm-hmm.
I'd still knock the shit out of him.
Well, it's interesting, too, because I just heard this morning Tom Thayer on the Bears All Access show, and he said, don't worry about Alvin Kamara. Don't worry about Michael Thomas. Don't worry about anybody on this roster. And Emmanuel Sanders, go after Drew Brees.
I agree with Tom Thayer 100%.
He's got bruised ribs, and so you guys are both.
He got broken ribs.
Yeah, right, right.
Exactly. He had multiple rib fractures.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So how long does it take for a broken bone to heal? And he had multiple. Okay, mm-hmm. So he's probably getting shot up, and he's wearing a flak vest, but that is going to have it's going to be concerning as far as his cardiovascular endurance, his movement ability, and actually his arm strength too. Because once if he gets whacked in there good, you know, then that's going to take away from everything he can do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you got to go after him, and you got to hit him hard.
There you go, hit him really.
You want to win the game? Take him out of the game,
but ooh, cleanly, baby.
but
football.
But cleanly.
Yeah, absolutely. Always.
No cheap shots.
All right, I want to get to some of these questions. Dwayne, my good buddy Dwayne, says, thanks for another amazing show. My question for Greg is this. Is Eddie Jackson overrated this 2018 season, make him overrated, or is he just not being properly used by Chuck Pagano in these last two seasons?
You know, it's a good question. I don't know if I can. No, he's not overrated. Don't forget, he said he had, what, two pick sixes called back?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so throw those into the equation. What are you saying?
You're saying that he's still not as good as the 2018 version of Eddie Jackson, but there's a lot of other...
Well, don't forget the other teams are saying they're looking at him and they're going, we don't want to be near him.
That's right.
That's part of the other team's game plan. Now, if you're looking to lock up one-on-one with him in a man-man situation,
mm-hmm.
you'd want to do that because he's a safety. And as I say, he played some corner at Alabama early in his career, but he doesn't have that corner explosiveness, quickness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you can get him locked up one-on-one, that's that advantage to the opponent. His ball skills, I don't think he's ever been – you know, he's not the knockout hitter.
Right.
Okay. As it turns out, after the fact, the best guy he was paired with now, and there's a little offset on that, and that, you know, Adrian Amos and him really played well together, but Adrian Amos was a banger. Okay. And so you had two players that complemented each other very, very well. Adrian Amos didn't show the ball skills and the range to play deep, and they played him up closer to the line of scrimmage. Right. But he has shown since he's been at Green Bay that he can handle that.
Right.
Part of that's experience too, and it's a little different scheme. But they were all that stuff came, and Vic Fangio was the defensive coordinator, so the scheme was a little bit different. Now you're in a different scheme. And, you know, can you say that it's not playing to the full strengths of what Eddie Jackson could do? You know, you could have that argument.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd have to really sit down and break down and then go back 3 years when
sure.
Dick was here and look exactly how the stuff was going on in the secondary as far as the coverage schemes and come up with that. But right. I'm not going to say that he's any less of a player because he's the same player. He's had some bad luck, and that some big plays that he's made have been taken away from him. Mm-hmm. And I think you're changing the discussion if those things actually had become, you know, reality instead of penalties.
Mm-hmm. My good buddy Christopher Gonzalez. And by the way, this whole Brad Biggs thing about Mike Borgonzi from KC, that's opened up a whole firestorm. People speculating about Ryan Pace's future and so forth. And so Chris Gonzalez asks, if Ryan Pace is released, what do you think about Elliot Wolf?
You know, I know a lot of these guys. I don't know Elliot. I know his dad.
Great
knows
guy.
Dad real well. Mm-hmm. But I don't know Elliot. So I can't say, because what it's when you're put in that position. Mm-hmm. Let me back up a little bit. You find out the answers to a lot of that stuff during the interview process.
Right.
Okay. So there's a lot of people who think highly of Elliot, but he's still never sat on the throne.
Right.
Okay. So he's been, you know, like I was. I've been a lieutenant. I've been a captain. I've never been the general. Mm-hmm. You know, and do I think I could be the general? I thought I could be, but now that I'm going to be 70 in a couple months, I don't even want to be. You know, seriously, it might kill you. And I'm being very honest when I say that, because sure. I know the pressure of the situation. That's why I like the XFL so much. You're doing the exact same things, but the pressure isn't. The pressure that you have, you're trying to develop players to get to the next level and still win games, mm-hmm. versus if I don't win, I'm gone.
Yeah.
You follow what I'm saying on the difference sure. between the two? Sure. And that was and that's what was so enjoyable to me. The other thing, too, was just starting from scratch and nobody had any players and then putting a team together, you know, and to me, that was just a blast. Absolutely. So, and you know, if in fact we get back together and working again in the next couple of months, like we're supposed to be, I'm going to be real excited.
Pretty cool. One thing that I know about Elliot Wolf is that when he was with the Green Bay Packers, everyone thought the Packers were kind of grooming him to be the next general manager. But when it finally came down to
make it, Brian Gutekunst.
Exactly. Well, but there were two or three executives with the Packers who were all being considered as a replacement for the GM. This was 3-4 years ago, and it was Elliott that was bypassed, and he immediately then wanted out. And
well, of course, he got passed over. And I'll tell you, Goody's done a hell of a job.
Mm-hmm.
Hell of a job.
Absolutely.
And I think he's more aggressive than Ted Thompson was. Ted's very, very conservative in his ways with, you know, how he put a team together and how he drafted.
Mm-hmm.
Where Goody is a lot more aggressive.
Very.
And that's, you know, helped Green Bay. Now, whether he made the right choice with the quarterback, that remains to be seen. But yeah. I think, you know, they did that with the same thinking as when they took Aaron Rodgers years ago. You know, let this guy learn under Aaron Rodgers for 3 years, and then Rodgers is going to be done, and we'll insert him, and we're not going to miss a beat. Well, you know, Aaron Rodgers is special. Who knows if this guy's special?
Right. I was down at the Senior Bowl a year ago, almost to the date, and Jordan Love was a huge topic of discussion. He almost a lot of people preferred him over Justin Herbert, who a guy that you love, and I just couldn't see it. But his athletic skills, his composure, and so forth, a lot of people fell in love with him. Clearly, the Packers did as well. Got a question?
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing about Justin Herbert. You mm-hmm. didn't see him do things that you'd want to see an NFL quarterback do within mm-hmm. that Oregon offense. Okay, but now I know his coach real well. Mm-hmm. You know, I've known him for years. He was our head coach in D.C. with the XFL, Pep Hamilton. Pep Hamilton has done a remarkable job with this guy. But Pep says he's just absolutely rare. You know, never worked with a guy like this before, and that he gets it right away. You don't have to repeat things with him.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very astute. But to do some of the stuff coming from the offense that he came from in Oregon, to do what he did, I think he threw for over 4,000 yards.
Yeah.
You know, as a rookie, this guy looks like a 5-year vet.
He really does.
As a rookie. You know, some of it is Pep, and a lot of it's Herbert himself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, you know, everybody's got an opinion on these quarterbacks before the fact. And reality is, until you really get them, you don't really know them, but you got to spend a lot of time with these guys in the pre-draft process to really find out what you're buying.
Yep, exactly. And I'll tell you one thing about Justin Herbert. When I saw him down at the Senior Bowl, I was just amazed at his size. He's a huge young man. I mean, this guy has an NFL quarterback. He's like a Peyton Manning with more athletic skills.
Well, he's a lot stronger. I mean, yeah. He's put together. I'd never say Peyton Manning was a ball buster in the weight room. Obviously, he did his work. You know, Trubisky works out. You could see that. He is put together for a quarterback. No, it was like Phil Sims was like that. Yeah. Phil Sims was a big guy and loved working out with weights.
And he took a lot of punishment, so he had to be big.
Yeah, and I mean, I got some stories there, interaction with him and Lawrence Taylor, but that's in the weight room. But that's
upcoming.
That's for another day. Okay. But, and some of these guys aren't, but Herbert, you just look at him. That's a big, strong guy. And the guy he reminds me of from a physical standpoint would be Josh Allen. And Josh Allen, most people were off on Josh Allen. That what Josh Allen had that nobody was giving him credit for was rare, and I mean extremely rare, football character. He just drove himself to be the best he could be. The game is that important to him. And so to do what he has done, because he couldn't hit, he had trouble hitting water from a boat when he was at Wyoming.
Really?
55% completion guy.
And
history tells you never are those guys going to have success.
Yeah.
Because, the windows to complete a pass in college are huge, or as big as the wall I'm looking at. But where the NFL, it's this big.
Yeah.
And yet this guy's done it. And he's one of the very few that have done it.
Dwayne Corey has another question. And I got to tell you, before I ask this question, we had Doug Plank on the Bears Bar Room about a year ago, and just listening to him talk and him complaining about what's wrong with the Chicago Bears organization. He was disappointed that management didn't bring in more players for executive roles and so forth. And one of the names that Doug Plank threw out was Gary Fensick, thinking that Fensick would be a great team president. And that's Dwayne's question here. He's asking you, do you think Gary Fensick would be a great, good, or interesting candidate or an interested candidate for team president?
I can't answer it because I've never met Gary Fensick.
Mm-hmm.
So I other than the name, I don't know anything about him.
Yeah. Yale, very successful off the field business practices. But I hear you.
For me to answer that question, that's just taking a dart, throwing it at the wall, and hope you hit a bullseye. Because I know, I know about him as a player. I know nothing about him as a person.
Mm-hmm. No problem. All right. Let's see. Let me scroll down here and see if I can find another question for you. We have got people are remarking that that first game that the Bears played against the Saints, we had Arlington Hambright starting at the left guard position and Jason Spriggs at the right tackle position. So that's a huge difference. That's probably why Nick Foles got sacked 5 times.
And I think didn't he say Bars was playing center?
Yes, Bars is playing center.
And Bars, that was either the first or second game in his life that Bars played. Bars played 2 games at center.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that was the first or the second, I don't know. But it was, but he played 2 games. Never in his life had he played center before. Mm-hmm. He was a tackle in high school, started off as a tackle at Notre Dame, and then moved inside to guard. But so, I mean, now from a standpoint of going further, I mean, he's got that experience. You saw that he could do it. But generally speaking, you don't want a 6'6 guy playing center. Mm-hmm. A little bit too tall for the position. But still, no experience playing the position. And not taking anything away from Arlington Hambright, but he's a late round pick playing in his first game. What do you expect against a damn good defense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he clearly wasn't ready. He probably would tell you that himself.
Well, you look, you know, you watch him on tape. Now, he played two places.
Right.
And he finished up at Oklahoma State. Guy's not, he's a good player. Now, when you look at him physically, he's built more like a guard. You know, they got to listen to 6'5". He ain't 6'5". Okay, he's 6'4", but he's got some good length, and he's a tough guy. He can move his feet, but when you just look at the natural traits, the traits say he's a guard, not a tackle, and yet he got put in that situation. Now, the other guy they drafted late from Tennessee State, Simmons, that's a tackle, but his FCS player, his tape at Tennessee State's pretty good, but he's playing against, he's raw technique wise, and he's playing against FCS level kids. And he dominated those kids because he's bigger and stronger, but still to go up really two levels of comp,
right?
You know, cause you're bypassing the Power Five level and then to the NFL, it's going to take him some time. You're hoping that next year is when you start to see something from a guy like that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right, particularly when you don't have a preseason. You don't have OTAs.
Right.
So
all the time, the snaps that those guys get in the preseason are huge.
Right.
Generally, you know, it's against vanilla defenses, and it's basically mano a mano, you know, man-on-man type of thing, and the best guy wins. You're not seeing any sophistication as far as, you know, how the defenses are rushing people and exotic blitzes and all that, but you're seeing how he handles himself against better competition. And so you go up from that, but those reps are huge. And none of these guys, you know, Simmons, Hambright, none of these guys got those reps. They'll get them next year, but they didn't get them last year. So now, you know, you put him in a game against a hell of a NFL defense, and it's like, wow.
On our Buffon 55 show earlier this week, we had on Chris Emma of 670 The Score, and one of the things that he talked about was Chuck Pagano's performance this year and that there are growing concerns about whether he's doing the appropriate job and that perhaps he might be somebody on the way out. Doug Dyer in the chat room says, what do you think about a Hugh Jackson or a Greg Williams as a defensive coordinator for the Chicago Bears? Do you know those guys? You have any?
I know Greg Williams, and Greg Williams is, I mean, people that have played for Greg Williams all jump on the table for him. You know Matt Bowen at all? Who, you know, local guy who works for ESPN.
Absolutely, great guy.
Okay. Matt played for Greg Williams. Matt loves him. But I think Williams' reputation got tarnished a little bit with the Jets this year. Now, that's not saying he can't come in and do a hell of a job. He's a great defensive coordinator. But for whatever reason, you know, things didn't work out at the Jets, and then he just totally blew it in that one game where he cost the Jets a win. You know, with that blitz, but you know, I can't say if in fact the Bears decide to make a change. First of all, you're assuming that Matt Nagy's going to be around, and I assume that he is. But is there a chance that he'd make a change on the defensive side of the ball? That's always a change, but that's part of the evaluation process that goes on. And you know, in fairness, he may have already made that decision. Like, he made that decision during the course of the year. Much as I like Harry, and Harry's highly respected, he felt that there was a disconnect between him, Harry, and the guy who was the offensive coordinator last year, former Oregon coach. Mark Helfrich. He had to make a change. And he brought in a guy that he knew, offensive line coach at Philly for a long time, teaches the blocking schemes a little bit differently. And you know, Juan, you got to say Juan has done a hell of a job with what he's done with a patchwork offensive line this year. Mm-hmm. You know, with these guys just throwing guys in and moving guys around, and
it's been amazing.
I work with Juan in Philly, so I know him not well, but I know him. Mm-hmm. But that year I worked with him, he was actually a defensive coordinator. Andy had moved him over to the defensive side of the ball, so I never got to see him. I've seen him like at clinics and stuff talking. He's one of the great offensive line coaches in the league, and I think Harry is too. But you know, in the case of Harry, there was a disconnect, and the coaches got to work with the guys he feels most comfortable with.
I got two more questions for you. I know you've got to go. You've got an appointment with your therapist to work on that knee. My one question is, you said earlier that the first Super Bowl you went to was Super Bowl 20. So you got to see Buddy Ryan's 46 defense, that pressure defense, throw everyone at the quarterback. Do you think a 46 defense, that pressure style defense, could be successful in today's NFL, where it's almost opposite? Defenses are dropping more guys into coverage as opposed to
I think people use variations of it still, but it's the game is so different. You know, back then, you know, that's 35 years ago, and the game was more of a running game. Don't forget, going back then, you always took running backs in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the run game was a huge part of the game, and very few quarterbacks were throwing for 4,000 yards. So the game's entirely different than it was when Buddy was coaching football. Now, do people use variations of that? Sure they do. Mm-hmm. But they're doing it more base downs. But, you know, the game now is a nickel game. You know, most base people, when you look at the amount of plays that you're playing in your sub packages, that's your predominant defense. So you can say, I play a 4-3, I play a 3-4. Bullshit. Everybody's playing four man down in a sub package. You know, whether the two outside guys are standing up or down, you got four defensive linemen, you got two linebackers, you got five defensive backs. Maybe you only got one linebacker and you got six defensive backs because you're using a bigger defensive back safety in one of those linebacker roles. Mm-hmm. You know, so and that's becoming your base defense now because of the way offenses are set up.
Right. All right. My last question for you before I let you get
you keep going into more questions here.
Oh, look at you. You got more time?
One more for you. No, I got one more. I'm busting your balls off.
I love it when you bust my balls. I hate to ask anybody for predictions, but I got to ask you, I like to phrase it this way. The Chicago Bears will beat the Saints on Sunday if, go ahead and fill in the blank there.
They play a perfect game.
It has to be totally
offensively, and nets on both sides of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You have to. Mistake-free, you can't have a turnover. I'm going to assume Roquan's not going to play. I'm going to be surprised if he does. It sounds like he hyperextended his elbow, and that, or maybe even worse than that. And I'm guessing there. I'm throwing the dart at the wall. But you got to make up for his loss. A perfect defense and perfect game on offense. Very few penalties, no turnovers, and run the football. Part of it is like last week. You want to beat the Saints, you can't let them score. How do they not score? They can't have the ball.
Exactly. But at the same time, you've got to take some chances, go deep. Hopefully Darnell Mooney will play. If I remember correctly, in that first meeting, Darnell Mooney caught 5 passes, 69 yards. The long was a 50-yarder for a touchdown. So, Darnell Mooney could be an important part of this offense. The other thing,
it sounds like he may be out too. I don't know what I don't know if it's knee or ankle.
I think it's an ankle.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, but he's a racehorse. He's a thoroughbred.
Yep.
Okay, so to me, you got to assume that he's not going to be around for this game. You make it out of this game, probably a better chance that he plays next week, but his game is speed and quickness. And if he's got a bad ankle, that's going to take away from that. I think, though, he's a rookie. Don't forget that.
Right.
And yeah, he was an important part, but as fast as he is, he still only averaged, what, 11 yards a catch or something like that. So let me pull it up here. He had 10.3 yards a catch. Okay. I think it's easier for the Bears to replace him than it is for the Bears to replace Roquan Smith. I think it's a lot easier to replace Mooney for 1 week.
Yeah, I don't think you'll get an argument. My biggest fear is that Roquan will not play, and that middle of the football field is going to be just a gift for Drew Brees and his offense. That's my biggest concern. Greg, really, really enjoy this. Thank you for your time. Good luck with your rehab, and then we'll be back here on Monday to talk about the Bears' win over the Saints if they play a perfect game.
Hey, it's like we got another week going. It's the last show for a while.
That's right.
We'll see what's going on.
And I just want to tell our audience that we will be back here tonight. Danny Shimon, who was a pupil of Greg Gabriel, and Neil Stopchinski, they're going to talk a little bit about the draft, but mostly about the Chicago Bears game. So we'll have a 1.5 hour show later tonight right here on our YouTube channel. Goodbye, everybody. If we don't talk soon, make sure you enjoy the game and join us for Bear football immediately after the game Sunday. Take care, everybody.
That was a tongue twister for you.
How about it?
See you later. See you later.